Hope, a comedy, or Cat, It's Not Just a Candy Bar, by Carrie McFadden, read by Brad McFadden. The sun beamed down upon their cheeks. Their foreheads lay warming themselves in the glow. An annoying fly flew by, and then it flew by again. The afternoon was stretching on. It was rolling over the hills and weaving in and out of the few trees that encompassed the meadow. The afternoon was here, and night, unforeseen, was approaching. Neither of these boys had any idea what was to come. Their thoughts of the future was on their supper, and that would be waiting for them when they arrived back home. This living in the moment was a good thing for them, for just as one of them started to comment on an oddly shaped cloud, the truck-sized leg of an alien craft flattened the two boys and made them one with the dirt. The craft was enormous. It had five legs, each trunk-sized in its footprint, which rose up as tall as the pine tree and just as narrow as the top, where perched above the massive body of the alien ship. The ship was beyond description. The color was a cross between honey and a 1972 blue Vauxhall Ventura. The shape of the craft was alien-like, too, all pointy and oblongy, and had these bits that stuck out in places. The whole thing looked like a mess. But who am I to say? I'm sure all the kids are jealous back wherever it came from. There was no sound and no movement of the air as the craft rested its weight upon the ground. No groan of gears or sighing of seams, no bells, no alarms, no beeping or whistling, just the sound of compacting earth and other things, like those boys, under its weight. A tiny black spot appears towards the top of the ship. Through the spot can be seen the blue glow of the insides of the craft, and then two green specks. The inside of the vessel was mostly blue. No, not mostly, completely. Yeah, that's the word. Stop trying to confuse me. It had blue walls, blue floors, blue ceilings, blue counters, blue knobs, blue buttons. In fact, it seemed a bit dangerous for a cockpit of any complexity, because all the blues were the same blue, and all the lights shining in the same obstinate blue, and there were not even shadows to note shape or depth. "So what do you think?" said one to the other, as they peeked out trying to hide the majority of their alien bodies beneath the window. "Well, it's different. You can say that for it," was the other's reply. The two, not seeing any movement beyond the window of the craft, slowly rose up from their cowering position and revealed their full faces to the strange new world outside. Now, when I say that one spoke to the other, that is exactly what I meant, so I'm not going to bring it up again. And oddly enough, they spoke English. You would think that a creature from a planet unknown, but surely a ways off, would have developed a unique language. But I guess that shows how wrong you can be. So we will not be evaluating your thoughts so highly in the rest of this story. Now back to the creatures. Carl and Carl were amazed by what they saw. Not really impressed, but amazed. They really liked the sky parts, when it was not being covered with those pale, cloudy things, or being overshone by the overbearing sun. The rest of what they surveyed was less than exciting. In fact, even made Carl yawn. "So what do you want to do?" asked Carl. "I brought the skip bow cards." Obviously, Carl was not the bright one of the pair. You two should get along great. "Carl, for the last time, oh, how I wish it was, those are not skip bow cards. They're Uno cards. Stop living in denial. No one is going to laugh at you. Not here." For years, Carl had dreamed of being a professional skip-bo player. And for years, his misguided parents had given him Uno cards for Christmas. This obsession had driven him over the edge too many times. In fact, if you look closely at his chins, the S is there because of fat, not because they're aliens. You can see the scars. "No, I mean check your list, your checklist, and tell me what we're scheduled to do next." Carl began a frantic search for the checklist that ended up with its discovery in his right hand. "Says here the next step is to land on the alien planet." There was an awkward pause that proceeded before Carl's vacant smile. Oh, okay. Done. Next, find alien life form, examine it, dissect it, remove anything valuable for research or anything the kids might enjoy. Return creature to normal life. Thank creature. Leave. Carl read as Carl stared off out into the window. After staring for a second in contemplation, he turned with a more determined look and said, in his best Clint Eastwood, "Let's do it." They marched out of the room into a smaller room. This room would have been awkward for any earthling because it was so unlike anything we are accustomed to. It was a tiny room, more like a closet. It was no bigger than 5 feet by 5 feet, or whatever they use for feet in wherever this ship was built. The walls were still blue, as was the ceiling and floor. But along one of the walls was a row of blue buttons arranged in two columns, each with a blue number beside it. Although because of the blue against the blue, I could not see them, and neither could you, so stop trying. It's just getting pathetic. As Carl reached out with a bony finger to press one of the buttons, two metal slabs slid across the floor to seal them. After a small jerk, some soft, cool jazz, and then another small jerk, and the two slabs of metal slowly slid back into the walls, revealing a completely different exterior, as if by magic or some futuristic technology unbeknownst to humankind. As they stepped from the odd little room, they began to squint. This room was much more stark than the one above, and only a quarter of the size. Apparently, the blue of this room was slightly brighter than the one from above, but to my eye, they looked just the same. The same numbing blue. It was obviously some sort of locker room, judging from all the lockers lining the walls. There were actually only three lockers in the room, but they were really big. Each of our heroes went to a locker. Carl to one with Carl printed in blue on the blue door, and Carl to the other one with Earl printed on a different blue door. There had been some sort of printing error at the locker door nameplate and embossing factory, and being that Carl was not the brightest of the blue bulbs, this always confused him. "Hey, Carl, who's Earl?" "That's you, Carl." He just stared at it with his head cocked. "What? But why? Why would my peons..." That's what these breed of aliens call their parents. Apparently they are more committal than we are. "Do that to me. Why?" Carl, having already put on his glasses to relieve his aching eyes, walked over to Carl, and placed his hand on his shoulder and gave him a look not unlike pity, because that's what it was. He slapped his other hand on the nameplate, leaving a big blue post-it note with the word Carl written on it in blue letters. Then turned and walked back to his own locker on the opposite wall and continued his dressing. Carl perked up. He threw open the locker with a metal bang and started donning his gear, just like he knew what he was doing. The two prepared themselves physically and mentally for their coming adventure. Their adventure into an unknown world of unknown colors and unknown creatures. Would they be able to complete their mission? Would they even make it back alive? I know the answers, but I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to wait with the rest of them. "No, I'm not telling you. No, not even a hint. Now sit down and shut up." Well, now the mood of terror and intrigue that I was so delicately preparing is ruined. Let's just move on to the next chapter. Chapter 2. As the two began to dress, they quickly discovered that they had forgotten to check the state of the atmosphere outside, and Carl said that he would sooner cover his pet iguana with ketchup, cook for 2 hours at a very low temperature to hold in the moisture, and feed it to a group of small school children, than ride in that crazy far-out contraption back up to check the status. So they did not know what to expect, and they figured it was better to be prepared than frozen. They put on gloves and scarves and wellies and mittens, raincoats, belts, suspenders, no fashion sense at all, a light windbreaker, 2 clean pairs of underwear, and one of those French hats that sits off to one side just for flair. As they stepped from the ship, they quickly remembered all they had forgotten. Carl, being distracted by Earl's nameplate, had forgotten to put on his glasses. So by this time, he had a splitting headache, and once the outside light hit his baby blue eyes, his head split again. Also, they had completely forgotten their breathing apparatus, which was fine, really, because neither had cared for breathing much anyhow. All morning, both of them had breathed several times, and not once did they stop to appreciate it. In fact, on his last birthday, neither of them would have even remembered to send it a card if Carl's mom hadn't called them to remind them. They gasped and coughed and struggled for breath, but were both too embarrassed to pretend like they missed it. Men. But Carl's multiple heads and both of their humbling, bluing prides were soon forgot when the last forgotten forgottee was forgotten no more. They had not remembered to extend the stairs. Thud! And a moment later, thud! They both lay upon the ground, staring back at their huge craft. Not only had they fallen to their deaths, but they also had no way of getting back aboard. This mission was not starting out good.
The end.